Case number 12-1383 et al. United States Department of Justice, Federal Bureau of Prisons, Federal Correctional Complex, Colvin, Florida, Petitioner versus Federal Labor Relations Authority. Mr. Scherer for the petitioner, Mr. Hennigy for the respondent.
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Howard Scherer and I represent the petitioner of the Federal Bureau of Prisons in this negotiability matter. Now, there are two issues regarding negotiability in this case, two proposals, and then there's the issue of mootness and whether this case any longer has any need to be considered by the court and whether the court ought to, in that case, vacate the decision of the authority and let everybody start anew. The proposals at issue, proposal one, as it's numbered in the opinion, has to do with contraband and internal security practices. And it's a position we've taken throughout that the proposal in this case that certain watches that set off the metal detectors in the compound area of the prison is a proposal that goes to the substance of management's right to make its determinations regarding internal security practices, and that at that point, consideration over whether it is valid or not ends. It is invalid for that reason, and you don't proceed any further into the excessive interference test because this is a proposal that actually goes to management's sole discretion of determining what is contraband in the prison setting. The second proposal, sentence three of proposal two, has to do with the question of that proposal that merely suggests agency action in light of a management decision, whether that is an appropriate arrangement. The authority held that it was negotiable, not that it was an appropriate arrangement, that it was negotiable because it only required the agency or required the agency to do nothing. That only said the agency should establish a secure area. But as to that, we would argue that there is no actual adverse effect that's being mitigated if it's only a suggestion by the union in light of management's or initial decision to put the two compound detectors.
If that's true, why do you care? Why are you even hurt?
We're concerned that if...
No, I asked why you're hurt. That there's no obligation. Real obligation, why are you hurt?
If we don't know what the result of not doing anything is, and we're not sure what that would be, if we
so
have a proposal...
So it's speculative. Is that your point?
It is speculative, and we don't know...
Why is there any injury?
Because if this is a proposal that's negotiable, and we have to negotiate over it, and this is the proposal, as the union states it, it gets implemented, I don't know the consequences of that with respect to the future. So we don't know whether we have to negotiate or not. And if we do, then this is the proposal we're stuck with. And even though it says should, we're stuck with having to negotiate over it, according to the authority.
Failed negotiation goes to the impasses panel?
It could go to the impasses panel and then be imposed on us, if that's your question.
I mean, isn't that your concern?
That is the concern.
That the failed proposal can go to you, and you, Lord knows what would happen there.
Exactly. Yes, Your Honor, that's it. As this court pointed out in NTEU versus FLRA, this is the decision at 848 F. Second, proposals have to be valid as proposed. You can't hope that they will work their way through to a valid proposal through negotiation because a proposal as written by the union can be imposed by the impasses panel. But that brings us now to the mootness question, which is, I think, an important question in this case.
Tell me again why you think proposal one?
We think it's a substantive proposal. That is to say, it dictates to management what constitutes contraband in the prison, and that's a decision that goes to the internal security practices of management under 7106A1, those things that the union cannot negotiate the substance of. And it has been our position that telling us what is contraband in the institution.
No appropriate arrangement?
There would not be one in this case. Well, there could be. Let's say we had the two. There could be an appropriate arrangement with respect to the implementation of the two metal detectors, yes, but this is not one. For example, you might imagine rubber mats being placed out near the metal detectors for comfort or whatever for the congressional officers, compound officers. That might be an appropriate arrangement. Another one might be, but I'm not saying it would be negotiable, but they fit in with the example we gave is a potential of an awning, which would protect the compound officers from the elements. We objected to awnings for a different reason. They interfere with the sight line, but at least that doesn't take away our sole discretion to determine what's contraband in the institution. Proposal 1 does, and that's the problem with it from our point of view. The authority accepted the union's argument that this was a mitigation of an adverse effect that would flow from putting these out, these two compound detectors out, but so would, for example, saying you can't put the compound detectors in the yard because it would cause too much or cause adverse effects. And certainly the court wouldn't approve, I think, of a union proposal that would say you can't put the compound detectors in the yard because there would be adverse effects flowing from that. And similarly, in our view, this is a closely related type of proposal. We're going to tell you what is contraband in the prison setting in order to, in the argument of the union, to mitigate any adverse effects that flow from the two compound detectors.
Why are these contraband?
Because that's what the proposal actually says. It says we will treat any watches that set off the metal detectors in the compound area as contraband. They shall be turned in first, and if not turned in, confiscated and then treated as contraband. And so the proposal itself at page 287 of the Joint Appendix just squarely says that's it. So that's some of our arguments.
If the proposal hadn't said it was contraband, but just describing the watches, would it not be?
It says.
No, if the proposal hadn't referred to it as contraband.
No, I think we would have still said it affects our internal security practices, but this went one step further and said contraband, and that's a much more.
But Judge Silverman's question is appropriate. Suppose it didn't use that word. Because appropriate arrangements still may be in play, depending upon your answer to the question.
I think we would treat it the same way. I think I would say
anything.
Why? Because anything that we're required to confiscate would be, in a sense, another way of saying this is contraband. It can't be in the facility. And I think we would have treated it the same way, but we weren't posed with that type of provision. But I think that's the way we would have treated it. I don't think the contraband by itself makes our case. It's a substantial support, but it's not the only reason why I would say this proposal actually is one that dictates what is confiscatable contraband in the prison.
Everything that's confiscatable is by definition contraband? Not sure, is it?
I'm not sure that's true, but I think in this setting we would treat it that way, in the setting of taking away watches. We have a relationship with the prisoners. We deal with them.
Are prisoners allowed to carry infinite amount of money?
No.
Is that contraband?
I would imagine it is. There's a whole.
Watches, money is contraband.
I think it would be contraband over a certain amount or whatever. We would treat it as confiscatable. I don't know. I don't know that I could answer that because I don't have the agency's views on that particular question in that context. But I think, for example, we have a regulation that's at 28 CFR 553.11 that deals with radios and watches and lays out what it is that's appropriate that an inmate can have. And watches are one thing, one radio is another. The watches are described. So the agency has determined what is not contraband by allowing watches in the facilities.
Where is there some agency authority that supports your proposition that contraband is within the sole discretion? No appropriate arrangements ever allowed.
With respect to contraband itself, I don't have a case for that, but the only argument we have for that is that it goes to an internal security practice. The authority has said it does not judge the merits of internal security practices.
There's nothing in the statute about internal security practices.
It is in 7106A1.
What does it say?
It says the following things shall be considered. Subject to subsection B, which is the negotiation provision, nothing in this chapter shall affect the authority of any management official of any agency to determine, and then this is one, the mission, budget, organization, number of employees, and internal security practices of
subject
the agency.
Subject to B.
So it says subject to negotiation. I don't understand.
And subject to negotiation for procedures, B2, or appropriate arrangements, B3, but not as to.
Well, wait a minute.
No, it doesn't make sense. Subject to it.
Right, but you can't propose, I would argue, and I think this is the point.
That's all you can say, I would argue, but it doesn't make sense.
Well, I think that some, and as the authority has said, some internal, some proposals strike right at the very heart of what defines a internal security practice.
So in other words, the authority has the authority, in your view, to make a judgment as to what negotiation goes to a heart of internal security practices and what just goes to security practices, because the statute you read specifically provides that subject that security practices are subject to negotiation. So therefore, the authority could have said any security practice is subject to negotiation. Authority has said only some are. Is that correct?
Well, it is pointed out it will not judge the merits of this or allow negotiation over the substance of a internal security practice.
You're not answering my question. It sounds to me like, it wasn't clear to me before when I was reading the brief, that authority has said certain internal security practices are subject to negotiations and certain are not. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know of any cases that put it that way. What I've said
well,
is...
Well, that's the implication of what you just said.
No, what I tried to say is the authority has said it will not judge or the merits or substance of management's right to determine its internal security practices. It will then move, it will only allow proposals that are appropriate arrangements in this case. But let me just move to that.
I don't understand that either.
Well, let me just say in that context, we also made the argument that if this is a proposal that is subject to negotiation, it excessively interferes with management's right to determine solely.
Yes, that's the argument I've got in your brief. But what does excessively interfere mean? Doesn't it, you expect the court to make a judgment on that?
Yes, I think I defer
to the FLRA on that?
Normally the court would. In a case like this, I would imagine that and the court has done this in the past with respect to excessive interference cases, where you have a proposal like this, it virtually which removes the sole discretion of the agency to make a decision about what constitutes an internal security practice, I think you have a situation
Do
where...
Do you have any case where we've defined what excessive means?
No, you've tried to put that line as... And I think when the court originally came up with the impinge to an excessive degree concept, you were acknowledging that the substance of management decisions cannot be taken away by negotiation, and you looked for a line up to which the union could negotiate without bumping into substance. It is difficult to find, I think, and it is a case by case decision.
Well, so, doesn't it demand us to defer to the FLRA?
I don't think you have to defer. I think you can.
I mean, this is an analytical matter. How the devil would we come up with a line of?
Well, in this case, we would argue you've removed our discretion to make the determination as to what constitutes contraband, and that is an opening proposal excessively interferes because it takes it away our right to make the determination as to internal security practices.
I want to ask you about mootness. Voluntary cessation doesn't ordinarily lead to mootness. So what is it about this circumstance that makes you think this is moot?
Well, originally, the agency put the two compound detectors in the yard to screen, have universal screening of every inmate all the time. And that was the basis for which the proposals at issue were submitted by the union. In particular, the bottleneck question was the concern with respect to Proposal 1. It was the concern for all of the other structures that were being put into place as well in the other proposals. The union was concerned about bottlenecks forming because of things that set off the metal detectors, their safety, and as well as matters of things from the elements standing outside. Our argument simply is this. Had we initially put the two compound detectors in the yard and said we're only going to screen on an as-needed basis, as we are now doing, as we did effectively March 18th, I think that bargaining would be severely different, or significantly different. And as a result, bargaining over what used to be universal screening of all inmates all the time no longer exists, and these proposals were made in that light. It seems to us to make no sense to go back and have to negotiate.
Unless you switched your position and went right back to the other one.
Right.
And mootness question. The question is whether the issue is whether there's, it's clear as a bell that you wouldn't reestablish your position.
Well, as this court said in the Community for Creative Nonviolence, if there's an indication that that's the case, or putting it in the reverse, there's no indication here that that's so, but that's what the court would be concerned about, and there's no indication here that Warden Jarvis, who came in and changed the practices with respect to the two compound detectors, will change it back as soon as this court renders a decision.
Well, the one thing you surely do not get is vacature. I'm not sure where that leaves you in the posture of this case. You seem to think you can get vacature, so the authority's position would remain. You're not in a case in which you can get vacature of their determination. I don't know whether that militates in favor of our saying, well, for now there's nothing to negotiate about, but the authority's position is the law, and if it comes up again, if the circumstances reappear, they have the right to negotiate over it, or whether we force you back to negotiate, deferring to the authority. Now, you're right. The changed circumstance, meaning there's nothing really to talk about, is there, but maybe that's a decision for the authority to decide. Maybe you remand, you say to the authority, they're not going to get vacature, but is there anything more for them to talk about now since circumstances have changed?
Well, I understand the question, Judge Ordaig. I think vacature is always a question of discretion for the court.
You're on the losing side of vacature, and you know you are. I mean, it's the cases are just quite clear. You created this alleged moot circumstance. You don't get vacature here.
Well, I think it's...
You don't have the case authority. Okay? I know that as well as I do. So I think the only question is, what do we do with it?
Well, let me assume you're correct on that. And go from there and say...
If you have a case that says otherwise, help yourself.
Well, I
can think of seven.
Well, I think Community for Creative Nonviolence is a case in which the judges did not stop their practice of requiring people to rise in the Superior Court. And the court said, but it's the controversy is so attenuated that we are going to withhold our hand, vacate the judgment of the district court, and remand and vacate.
Well, this isn't attenuated.
I think it is attenuated because we don't have an issue any longer about universal screening all the time. We only have...
Is it the same issue for us with respect to, first of all, I don't think there's a vacature here anyway, but if there was an argument, is it troubling that we're talking about an agency rather than a district court? We have more authority in the district court than we do over an agency.
Right,
but well, we pointed out in a footnote the court has always treated the mootness and vacature equally with respect to...
I saw the footnote. I'm not sure that's true.
Well,
we never really faced the question.
It leaves us, as Judge Edwards pointed out, and I think I'd like to answer that question this way. With, let's say the court remands, we have, dismisses our case as moot, but doesn't vacate. We have an authority decision. I don't know what instructions you would give the authority, but the authority right now has an order outstanding.
Why did you go back to the authority when you had this changed circumstance?
Well, we made our motion to dismiss as moot, hoping it would provoke some further discussion about that, but it didn't. The authority opposed our motion to dismiss. So here we are. I take it the authority doesn't...
No, the authority... the motion before the authority opposed? I don't understand.
No, we filed a motion here to dismiss...
No, you didn't file anything before the authority, did you?
Well, we were beyond the time to file a motion for reconsideration, and the authorities...
So you made the change after the time to file for a motion for reconsideration?
That's correct. We're already on a briefing schedule here in this court.
That's when you made the change, when you had a briefing schedule in this court?
I think we had an initial briefing schedule. I'm not sure. Let me go back over that. Yes, we moved after we moved to dismiss.
You put a motion in this court to remand, and you wanted to file a new motion before the federal authority. We certainly would have granted that in a nanosecond.
That's interesting to hear, Your Honor, because I would have thought the motion to dismiss would have been treated
similarly.
No,
that's not the same thing.
I know, but I...
If the authority had agreed, then we would have, which they probably would have, we would have said, yeah, fine. I mean, it's just sort of peculiar. This is such an artificial case.
Well, it is at this point, for sure, and I don't know what the court would instruct. I know my time is up. May I sort of finish that line of thought where... If you remanded and you didn't vacate, we have an order to negotiate or not disapprove. And I don't know where that leaves us. I have no idea. Certainly, negotiation over the old proposal makes no sense. And a negotiation over the new proposal, nobody's asked. The union didn't
submit. If you remand, the agency makes a determination as to what the appropriate remedy should be. If first, whether or not there really are changed circumstances, and then how they handle it.
Well, it seems to me it would actually call for a determination or an entirely new analysis of what, whether or not there are no union proposals vis-a-vis
the
changed circumstances.
We wouldn't tell them that. They would figure it out. And then if someone feels aggrieved, then they would appeal it again. But that would be for them to determine in the first instance. I think I have actually written an opinion on what Judge Silman was talking about. We treat agency and court appeals differently on the mootness question. But I can't bring it to my head right now. But in any event, okay.
I think I've run over my time. I was hoping to save a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Scheer.
I think this is fine. Thank you. May it please the court.
I can't hear you.
We can't hear you.
Oh, you can't hear me.
There's a button just right to your right there. That. Just press it up.
The green one.
To your right.
It's your own
to your
fault.
Right.
Your
I know.
Fault.
I tell you.
Oh, here we go. For being so tall.
Oh, you're tall, right.
Work on that. May it please the court. My name is Zachary Hennigy. I'm here on behalf of the Federal Labor Relations Authority. As you just heard, there are three areas that we're here to discuss today. Two of them involve the proposals, Proposal 1, Proposal 2. Proposal 1 involves limiting watches that set off these nuisance alarms. The proposal relates to two metal detectors that were installed in the yard that's inside of a compound that resulted in officers having to check on inmates as they left the yard. In that proposal, the agency failed to show the burdens and how the proposal burdened its security objectives. Proposal 2, just quickly to go through these, we're talking about the third sentence of Proposal 2. As you know, the authority found the proposal as a whole to be non-negotiable. But taking that last sentence, it could stand on its own and act independently. And the authority viewed that and noticed that by not requiring the agency to put up the fence or the secured area, it did not show how that it was not, there was any requirement to bargain over that issue.
Is counsel correct that, you know, it just says should, but if they did nothing about it, that could lead to impasse?
Counsel says that it's speculative, and I would say that that's not, that
no,
this
no,
proposal
no, no, no,
answer
the question Judge Brown asked you.
The question is, one way to look at this is to say, well, it just says should, so you don't have to do anything about it.
Correct.
Right? But counsel says, well, you know, maybe if we don't do anything about it, we still end up before the authority.
Impasse.
Correct. Right? You could end up before the impasse panel.
What's that going to do?
The impasse panel could, one of two things, say, well, or probably somewhere in between, but they could say, this proposal is going to become part of the agreement. And if that proposal became part of the agreement,
yes,
as the authority says in footnote 7, and the union describes what that proposal means, the agency does not have a requirement to create this chain link secured area. In this sense, I see the troubled look.
Yes.
That sounds like what
are we doing?
That there's no requirement?
Well, wait a minute. What could the, if the impasse panel could not order the agency to bargain about this stuff, you keep calling it agency, I think the FRA, if the impasse panel could not order, that's what I think you're saying, could not order the prison to bargain over this subject, what the devil could the impasse panel do?
The authority is requiring the agency to bargain with the union over the proposal. When it gets to the impasses panel, they make a determination of what is going to go into that collective bargaining agreement. At that point, the proposal could be become part of the agreement.
Which proposal?
The third sentence.
The proposal that the agency should bargain?
Correct.
How can that be part of an agreement?
Parties all the time put aspirational provisions in contracts that they negotiate, saying we agree on something, we might not actually act on it, but we've come together, we've talked about these issues, and we think in this agreement we're going to codify something that, again, aspirationally we would like to do.
An agreement would say the department should give time off for X reason. That would be in the contract, but it wouldn't be obligated.
Ultimately, could be in the contract if it goes through the...
Do you have any other examples like that?
We point to one case in our brief that described a meal period, something similar like that with a quote-unquote should proposal and the agency's obligations to do that, but ultimately is not required to act on the proposal.
Bottom line, if the impasse panel could not order, under your understanding of this proposal, could not order the prison to do the should. Is that correct?
Correct.
Oh, well, so then I'm back to my original question. What the hell is at stake in this case?
For this proposal, too, you're referring to, Your Honor?
Yes.
For this proposal, again, we've narrowed down that proposal. The union narrowed down that proposal so that it acts on its own. It doesn't seem to be the issue here. But this could be something for further discussion later on. I'm not here to speculate on that. But as it pertains to the secured area, it doesn't put an obligation on the agency. And I don't think the court tries to get into the minds of the parties to determine what's this makes
no,
sense.
No, we're only concerned about what the impasse panel could do. Your statement clearly is the impasse panel could not order the prison to do anything with respect to this subject.
The panel could order them to put this into a contract. And then the agency or the union, if the union decided to change its mind and say, no, we actually think that this means more than should, it goes to an arbitrator or back to the authority for some reason. Footnote 7 describes what the union described it, and ultimately, you're correct, Honor, the agency would not be able or would not be required to.
Could the arbitrator?
It could, but that could be appealed, and I think footnote 7 very clearly says very directly, two arbitrators out there, this is what the union thinks this means.
Well, I'd be darned if I understand what's at stake in this case on this particular issue.
And again, I don't think it's for...
If it was a private party, it would say there's no standing.
The authority has to look at these cases, and the union clearly thinks there's some value to having this proposal in a contract. The agency seems to think that it's worth fighting for, even if they don't have to do anything. And in the end, that's for the parties to determine, and it might not sit well, but analytically, I think that the court should uphold the authority's decision.
What about the first argument? First
proposal.
That seems to be more of a substantive, or perhaps.
For the first proposal, the authority, like it typically does, goes through the Kang analysis, determine whether or not the proposal excessively interferes management rights. The agency says it's got this quote-unquote substance that the unions cannot bargain over the substance of a management right. That's not the statutory scheme. As you noted, 7106B3 qualifies A.
Is there anything different about contraband as compared to any other management right?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
Yeah, no. That's what I was puzzled
about. Not that I'm aware of.
And any management right can be subject to negotiation on appropriate arrangements.
Correct, Your Honor. This court very directly told the authority in its FG Local 2782 decision, 1982 decision, that 7106B3 qualifies A. It's an exception to A, and the union will have the right to try to find something that is an appropriate arrangement. And that means the arrangement is the first part of the test. Are there adverse effects to the employees, and does the proposal attempt to mitigate those adverse effects?
And we have already held, in support of the authority, that security arrangements are subject to Kang. I mean, that's where I don't understand the other side's argument at all, because we've already had that issue.
Correct. Correct, Your Honor.
So the question here really is the security arrangement. And then they're arguing mootness on top of that.
Correct. And so if we move past this idea that this is some sort of inherent right, it's not. The union can come up with ways to find to mitigate the installation of the metal detectors. Here it does. It's trying to make something more efficient. There are the potential bottlenecks when you have to screen these people with it, that are setting off the nuisance alarms. There's safety concerns for the union here. And even as the agency concedes, the employees are going to spend more time outside as a result of the metal detectors being installed.
We need to talk about mootness.
Okay.
I knew the presiding judge was interested in mootness.
As it pertains to mootness, the Supreme Court repeatedly has said if there's no reasonable expectation that the event will recur, and we're looking at whether or not the action taken by the agency has irrevocably eradicated the issue. That is clearly not, that has not happened here.
But even if they don't meet the standard for mootness here, isn't counsel correct that this is now a stale dispute? I mean, if it goes back, you know, they're going to be negotiating about something which is now no longer the case.
I disagree. Looking at Addendum B, this is the March or the February 2013 addendum or memo that the agency put out. First, the metal detectors, it very clearly says, will not be removed from the recreation area. Second, it says that they will remain and be utilized to screen inmates, quote unquote, as needed. To say that that doesn't foreclose this from recurring again, it explicitly says that it will. It says that, you know, these things will be done randomly. They think there's suspicious behavior, and then et cetera, whatever that means. The possibility of this happening again next week, tomorrow, at any point, at any time, this exact controversy is at play here.
I understand that you're saying, in your view, the case is not moot. I was asking something a little different, which is, at the moment, they're not doing this. You know, the screening of all inmates, which was leading to the bottlenecks, or could have, that's what the union was worried about. So is there any point, in other words, should we remand to the authority?
I don't think it's necessary. I think so. There are two things going on there. One, I don't think that the evidence, if you look at what they're basing the mootness claim on, that it's not happening at all. I don't think that's here. You certainly don't glean that from the memo. Two, this all or the universal requirement to have all the inmates go through the metal detectors, that wasn't the lens through which the authority based its decision. If you look through the decision, it doesn't say, or it's not dependent on every single inmate coming through the yard through the metal detector.
But it's certainly dependent on the backlog, right?
That's part of it, certainly.
Yeah, but I think what Judge Brown is asking you, why wouldn't we remand? This is about an appropriate arrangement.
Correct, Your Honor.
And if the circumstances have changed and the authority hasn't considered it, why wouldn't it be their responsibility to consider it in the first instance, whether or not this is not an appropriate arrangement now to the current circumstance? If it arises again, the authority could say, then the union would have an opportunity to negotiate.
I think the memo clearly states that it will arise again. It says that, as needed, we're going to continue to do this. We don't exactly know what that means, but it could be happening right now based on this memo, this new evidence that the agency puts into the case. And the authority's decision balances the benefits and the burdens, the unexplained burdens in this situation.
Suppose the original practice had been only an episodic, rare occasion where there was a check to see whether or not the watch turned, set off the alarm. Isn't it clear that that would have been a different case for you? Probably a different case for the union?
The way that the authority, it could have been a different case, Your Honor, certainly. The way the authority analyzed the...
That's the question that both my colleagues are asking.
Right.
It's now a different case.
I don't think the way that the authority analyzed the case, it didn't say that every day all these inmates, this is an issue. If it's episodic, you could put episodic into the analysis.
The point is, if there was not a backlog, if there was not a backlog of officers standing there, there
Correct.
Wouldn't be a problem, right?
Correct.
So That may be the situation, so why are we talking about a hypothetical?
I think, well, the memo describes this randomly occurring as needed. I don't think that, I don't see the change that's happened there. There are no further questions?
Does the court have any further questions?
No.
No.
No. Thank you, Mr. Hannigan.
Thank you.
Mr. Scherr did not have any additional time, but we'll give you a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. So let me try to answer some questions quickly. Money is always contraband in the prison. Agency authority for deciding what is contraband is the, are the briefs I've announced. The authority for deciding what is contraband is established at 28 CFR 553.10 through 553.15. Anything that's...
What does it say?
It's a very lengthy provision which...
Deals with contraband?
It deals with all kinds of thing, property, inmate property in general. And in particular, watches and radios are dealt with in 553.
You're talking about a statute?
Excuse me,
Your Honor? You're talking about a statute?
No, a regulation. Regulation.
That has nothing to do with the appropriate arrangement question.
No, but I was trying to answer some of the questions that Judge Silverman asked.
That's a fair point.
Anything that's confiscated.
But you were suggesting that anything that was contraband couldn't be covered with an appropriate arrangement. There's no truth to that.
There's no truth. Well, there's no authority for that. And we have said to the contrary.
But let me argue that we also pointed out that we thought, and this goes to Judge Silverman's other question to me, that this excessively interferes with our management prerogative by removing our sole discretion to make determinations about what is contraband in the setting of the prison. Bottlenecks were the sole reason for this, this set of proposals and the authority's decision. At 288, 290, 289, 290, 291, 292 of the authority's decision, it talked about bottlenecks. And these proposals, I would submit, would not exist as they are, at least proposal one, if it weren't for the bottlenecks that were claimed to be created by...
Let me go back to the should. If, as counsel for the authority has just stated, no one under any circumstances can order your client to bargain to do anything concerning the should clause. So what the devil is at stake?
As long as we've got that on record, I think we're happy with that. We didn't that would be the result.
We solved part of the case.
Yes.
Right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Sheriff.